A group of community leaders came together to form the Putnam County Resilience Coalition. Their goal is to raise awareness of trauma-informed care in the community. How does that impact all of us? And what efforts are underway? Elizabeth Ramsey is an assistant professor of human ecology at Tennessee Tech.
Trauma-informed care, I feel like really, honestly for me, came out of probably our understanding of adverse childhood experiences. I have been in this field since the 90s. I'm kind of dating myself. But this field of human development and family relations, family science. And, you know, we always knew, you know, we read all kinds of types of research studies where we were identifying just the long-term effects that adverse experiences have on children. And so we read about those things and knew about those things and saw it in literature and saw it in data. We saw that children who had experienced abuse were more likely to have negative outcomes. With that said, what really began to happen in the 90s is that from a neurological standpoint, brain research, we were able to capture images of the brain through MRIs. And we were able, you know, brain science really took off, and they were able to see the adverse outcomes of what happened to children who experienced certain things in their childhood. So
it went from we thought to now we can see.
Well, I think, yeah, you begin to see, you know, in research, as researchers, it's you can never really make a cause and effect statement, but you see a correlation. And we saw these correlations in literature all the time. You know, we knew that children who experienced negative things in their childhood, you know, had a more difficult time in school. They had a more difficult time with their behaviors. They had a more difficult time holding jobs. Maybe they had negative health outcomes later in life, mental health diagnoses. You know, we saw these things, but all of a sudden when brain scientists were able to capture images of the brain, it all really began to make sense. And we had a landmark study called Adverse Childhood Experiences, and that was in the 90s, and we were able to see exactly what trauma was doing to children's brains, the negative impact that it was having. It actually impacts the development of a child's brain, because we know that babies, when they're born, their brains are in an unfinished state. And so we began to see that, gosh, this really has lasting impact. And so I really think that trauma-informed care began to be kind of an answer to adverse childhood experiences, that we saw we needed to do something for these children, and we need to be able to build resilience for these children. And so trauma-informed care is just a piece of being able to build resilience for children who have experienced trauma.
How do we define in this context what a trauma is? What are some examples?
So if you look at types of trauma, you know, trauma is, I always say it's in the eye of the beholder. So what is traumatic to one person may not be to another person. And so that's why it's really important when we talk about adverse childhood experiences. Although we can say, yes, those could be traumatic experiences, but the truth is it's not always internalized that way. So, for example, in adverse childhood experiences, we have five ACEs that fall under household dysfunction. Well, one of those is divorce. Some people may be absolutely traumatized by their parents' divorce, while others may not be. So trauma is really in the eye of the beholder. Trauma also doesn't just encapsulate childhood trauma, such as abuse, physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, neglect, emotional and physical neglect, and then, of course, household dysfunction. So it doesn't always encapsulate that. It also encapsulates things like natural disasters. Like we just had, you know, the tornado, sure, for example, in 2020. It also could be community violence. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of this lately in the news with school shootings, you know, random shootings in towns. It could also be any type of just event that occurs in a person's life at any point of their life. So, like, for example, I teach a course at Tennessee Tech, and we look frequently at case studies of soldiers who have been at war.
As we continue with Dr. Elizabeth Ramsey, she is a Tennessee Tech professor of human ecology. Our guest today is Dr. Elizabeth Ramsey. We're talking about trauma-informed care and how trauma, it's not just about feelings and emotions. It actually has, as research has shown, it has physical impacts on the body. Do we know much about how a trauma that happens at age 30 or age 50, can it still impact the brain the way that it does with a child, or do we know?
Well, that's a good question, because in reality, a person's brain, so when we look at brain development, typically the human brain is fully matured. Literature shows us probably by the 20s. Every now and then you might see like late 20s, or for some males, maybe even early 30s. But usually by late 20s, that brain is completely developed. Trauma does impact a person cognitively. So when we think about, you know, really, really a traumatic experience, depending on the individual. And I always like to remind people that different individuals respond different ways to traumatic experiences. And so sometimes you'll see people, you probably have heard of that fight, flight, or freeze. And so, you know, when a certain person who has, say, unfortunately maybe experienced a rape in their 30s, and if they are triggered in some way, and, you know, a trigger can occur at any moment. Sure. You don't know what's going to trigger a person, but maybe a certain smell or a certain sound. And all of a sudden they become triggered, and a person will respond in a variety of ways to that trigger. But, yes, it can. People can start to have cognitive and psychological manifestations from these traumatic experiences, and it can be long lasting. So we just need to offer people as much support as possible.
Do we understand very much at all of why some people can deal with trauma and some people can't?
Well, and what you're alluding to there is the topic of resilience. And, you know, when we look at people who are resilient people, usually you can identify certain characteristics about people. A lot of times resilience is associated with a positive support person in their life. So, for example, for children, if a child has at least one adult who is in their life, who loves them, who's invested in their life, caring for them, supporting them, just kind of that buffer, that's going to really help that person be resilient. Another thing that helps people be resilient is honestly their intelligent level. That plays a big role. So IQ, we also can see things like what happened to them in their life, like this idea of recognizing people's achievements, winning awards, having that sense of self-efficacy, I can make a difference. Those are all things that help a person be resilient and weather kind of the storms of life. Now, with that said, there is a famous analogy about children and how sometimes we have children who are like dandelions, and they thrive anywhere. And you think about, I know right now, if you walked outside in my house and looked at where my driveway meets the road, you would see in that little crack some dandelions sprouting up. I need to spray that probably right now. And, you know, a dandelion will just thrive and grow. And then you think some people, some children are more like orchids. And I don't know if you've ever tried to grow an orchid. I've tried several times and I honestly have given up. I don't buy them anymore because unfortunately they wither and die in my house. And I hate to even use that terminology, but they just need a lot of extra care and support. And so the things that build resiliency for people, you know, when we talk about what helps people overcome and what helps them be able to weather a traumatic experience, it's that amount of support that we're offering them. And when we can come along as a society and offer safety nets, be a person who cares, be a person who is there, who listens, who supports, we're really going to make a difference in our society. And I think the truth of the matter is we don't know who has experienced a trauma or not. And if somebody's triggered, and if you've ever been around somebody who's, you've seen that emotional, you know, like maybe they've broken out in a sweat, they're starting to breathe rapidly, getting very upset, maybe they start getting agitated and you know, yelling out. It's really nice to come with a trauma-informed care approach and learn how to help a person de-escalate in that moment.
We're visiting with Dr. Elizabeth Ramsey from Tennessee Tech as we talk about trauma-informed care. Dr. Elizabeth Ramsey from Tennessee Tech is our guest. So we know more based on the advances made technologically in the 90s with the research of the brain. So how does that change the way that an educator, the way that a counselor, the way that a parent deals with a child who has been through some type of trauma in their life?
What we know, how does that change how we respond? That's one of the things that I've really been interested in is looking at this idea of empowering people with knowledge so that we can, as a society, learn how to respond to people who have experienced trauma. And I think that's where the idea of this trauma-informed care approach kind of came to life. And we know that people are going to be able to overcome better if they have a positive relationships in their life, you know, supportive care, listening ears. And one of the things that I think, too, that I've really tried to convey with this trauma-informed care message is that we need to be people who respond instead of react. And really what that means is that the truth of the matter is when people who have experienced trauma get triggered. I think about children. I've worked a lot with children who have experienced trauma. And my kids who might get triggered by something. A lot of times their behavior is very off-putting. People become very uncomfortable because they have a child who may be having a tantrum, maybe acting out, screaming, crying, very emotional and upset. And, you know, typically a lot of times as adults or other children, we find ourselves reacting to that outburst. And a lot of times the reaction can be quite negative and actually make it worse. And I think, for instance, sometimes you hear adults say, "Why are you acting like that? What's wrong with you?" And we've got to get to a point where we respond in a positive way. I think of phrases that I try to empower people with, like, "Gosh, I can see this has really set you back. Would you like to talk about it?" Sometimes when I had a child who was just, you know, really agitated and acting out, I might see that they just need some time to de-escalate. And I might offer them just some time to sit and just de-escalate. We call it a peace corner. you know, just calm yourself. And when you're ready to talk, I'm here for you. And just offer that supportive care.
Can the brain be repaired, so to speak, or is it learning to deal with what has been done?
Okay, so it's interesting, and that's a great question, and I want to give the answer a resounding yes. However, it really takes a lot of time. So what we know about the brain and how trauma impacts the brain. So we all have the amygdala, which is the fire alarm to our body. It's that piece that if you walked outside and you saw a grizzly bear, that amygdala would send off a warning. You gotta fight, flight, or freeze. You gotta do something.
Right.
And what happens to people who have experienced trauma, and especially when we start thinking about excessive amounts, like habitual chronic trauma, say a child who's living in a situation where they have been not just sexually abused once, but they have experienced this almost every night of their young lives. Mm. These children, that amygdala actually becomes enlarged. And when children are living with that constant release of stress hormones, it actually does cause some damage in that brain development. And we actually, when we look at the prefrontal cortex of those children's brains, we see that the connections in their brain, the synapses, it's like there's just not a whole lot of activity when you look at those MRIs. I have two slides that I show side by side of just a typically developing child in a healthy environment. And you can see, you know, their brain is just nicely firing away. You know, those connections are being made, where a child who has experienced an excessive amount of abuse, you just see like dark, not a whole lot of activity, especially in that prefrontal cortex. And what's really important about that prefrontal cortex area of the brain is that that's the area of the brain that helps us make good decisions, helps us self-regulate.